Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. Boris Chassin here with you for the next half hour. On today's show, the Alberta government will be sending out $600 inflation relief packages to its citizens.
The $2.8 billion package, which includes significant broad-based supports and now targeted relief payments.
In Ontario, the Prince Edward County Municipal Council will keep the Ukrainian flag raised until the end of its term or until the end of the conflict.
I mean, these people are fighting for our democracy, too. We owe a lot to these Ukrainians. And their resilience and their determination to be a free country and a democratic country.
In Quebec, the town of Brome Lake brushes off Bill 96 and votes to keep its bilingual status.
It is essential for the democratic life of the municipality. It was a no-brainer for us. We survived together and we're proud of this.
In BC, a climate activist for the Canadian branch of Stop Ecocide wants the International Criminal Court to pursue crimes against the environment.
Right now, there's a movement of giving rights to nature, but those rights don't mean anything unless we actually have a criminal law to back them up with.
And former Six Nations elected chief Bill Montour recently passed away at the age of 81. The community mourns his loss. This and more in Viewpoints.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Inflation is hitting households hard across the country, and many provincial governments are giving handouts to their citizens fighting to pay off their bills. The government of Alberta is rolling out inflation relief packages to help families that are struggling to keep their head above water. Eligible Albertans, including seniors, families with children under 18 years old, and vulnerable residents, will receive $600 over a six-month period. Applications for the program opened up on January 18 and will stay open until January 30. In Edmonton, Alberta, Ryan Hunt spoke with Alberta Minister of Affordability and Utilities, Matt Jones.
The government of Alberta is rolling out the biggest inflation relief package in Canada to help Albertans struggling with the current inflation period. Matt Jones, Minister of Affordability and Utilities, spoke about what these packages entail.
The $2.8 billion package, which includes significant broad-based supports and now targeted relief payments. The broad-based supports included $500 in electricity rebate, fuel tax relief at the pumps across Alberta, and of course, natural gas price protection. And now we've come to the next step, which is in recognition of the additional burden placed on families, including Indigenous families and seniors, we're rolling out $600 over 6 months in affordability payments.
Jones says that the long-term goal of these packages is to help Albertans stay afloat while prices soar everywhere else.
The long-term goal is to help Albertans deal with the inflationary and cost of living pressures that they are facing. And we do that over a six-month window so that we can reassess the level of inflation and the affordability challenges and respond appropriately 6 months from now.
There are many ways Albertans can sign themselves up for the program, and Matt Jones has a list for it all.
Anybody who is collecting AISH, income support, the Alberta Seniors Benefit, or receiving services through PDD will automatically receive these monthly payments with no application required, as will kinship caregivers, including delegated First Nation agency caregivers. They will automatically receive these payments. For parents of children under 18 and for seniors 65 and up who are not on these programs, they will go to alberta.ca/affordable, and it's an easy two-step process. Step one is to obtain a verified account, and then step two is to go back to that same website, which is alberta.ca/affordable, and apply for the payments on or after January 18th.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
Sarah Gouda in Halifax, Nova Scotia. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
The Ukrainian flag will keep flying in the wind at the Shire Hall in Picton, Ontario. Prince Edward County Council reaffirmed the municipality's solidarity with Ukraine by voting to continue its raising of the Ukrainian flag until the end of its term, unless hostilities overseas cease before then. The county is also beginning to explore a twin city relationship with one of four Ukrainian municipalities that were represented by a Ukrainian municipal delegation that visited Prince Edward County in 2019. The goal is to exchange information and ideas and learn about other governance models. Sofiasburger Councillor Bill Roberts, who proposed the motion at the council, had the following words to say about the state of the four Ukrainian municipalities and his thoughts on the war thus far.
I don't know what condition are there now. Hopefully all four are doing okay, but it's hard to know that. I have reached out to the Federation of Canadian Municipalities a couple of times to get more information. They're busy people. Our staff has stepped up and said, you know what, let us do it. You know, I still remember President Zelensky's, you know, man of the year, whatever kind of thing on Time magazine. But the thing that really struck home to me was when the Russians invaded, when the Putin and his war criminals crossed the border and invaded. The West offered Zelensky a way out. We'll get the special ops people in there. We'll get you out. We'll get you to a safe country.
Government in exile stuff, kind of your pattern, yeah.
And what did Zelensky say? No thanks. I don't need a ride. I need ammunition. Good for him.
Yes.
And in the early days of the war, you saw photographs of kids, you're not a kid, but people younger than you, with skateboard knee pads and, helmets on and, learning how to fire Kalashnikovs. You saw poets and professors and plumbers and stepping up. I mean, these people are fighting for our democracy, too. We have the luxury of, we'll buy some anti-aircraft stuff from the Americans and send it to you, whatever. We have that luxury. Our Prince Edward County isn't rubble and charred, and our economy hasn't lost a third of its wump, and millions of people in this country are not sleeping without electricity tonight. We owe a lot to these Ukrainians. And their resilience and their determination to be a free country and a democratic country.
Comments collected by our journalist Alexander Wright, working out of Picton, Ontario. In Quebec, the town of Brome Lake decided to preserve its bilingual status, even if more than half of its population is French-speaking. The municipal council passed a resolution on January 9 to preserve the municipality's status. This allows Brome Lake to communicate with citizens in both French and English. Under Quebec's Bill 96, a new language law that is meant to promote and protect the French language, towns, cities, municipalities, boroughs, and townships that currently hold a bilingual status must pass a resolution to maintain such status if less than 50% of its citizens identify English as their mother tongue. More than 90 of some 1,000 municipal organizations in Quebec hold a bilingual status, 19 of which are located in the eastern townships. That's an hour or two from Montreal. Town of Brome Lake Mayor Richard Burcombe described the decision to preserve Brome Lake's bilingual status as a no-brainer. In Knowlton, Quebec, Taylor McClure spoke with the town's mayor.
Council was unanimous. Bilingualism remains a great asset, for our community. I mean, it was built on this, and this cohabitation, is going to be preserved. That is for sure. I guarantee that, and the council guarantees it also. It is essential for the democratic life of the municipality, that we continue to serve our English-speaking fellow citizens, as myself. I'm English. My mother tongue is English, mm-hmm. In their mother tongue. So, it was a no-brainer for us. I mean, I grew up in this town. I worked on the police here for 43 years and became mayor in 2013. And it was always the French and English getting along. We'd never basically, to my knowledge, had a problem over language issues. We lived together, we talked French and talked English. You know what I mean? So we survived together, and we're proud of this co-living together that we have done over the years. And there was not one negative comment concerning, you know, us keeping our bilingual status. So it's proof, as they say, it's proof in the pudding, right? That, you know, with nobody contesting it, nobody's mentioning it, just people saying, are we going to keep it? We have to keep it. Well, we did, and we are going to keep it, and we'll continue to keep it also. You know, it's slowly the English population has decreased. I mean, back when I started in 71 working here on the police, it was probably, I don't know, probably around 80-20. 80% English-speaking, 20% French-speaking. And slowly the evolution has changed, and now it's 42%, you know, English. And that's the way it's going. That's the evolution. But yes, the history and the heritage of this town was built around that. So there's a lot of other towns that have expressed the same ideas, too, that, you know, that it's very important to serve and not to forget about, you know, the English people and how the town was built, and how also the French have contributed to the building of this, the town of Brome Lake also. Like I said, we have got always along great together. We're a prime example to the rest of the province, how we live together and operate in both languages, and there's no, you know, dealings contrary to that.
When the town was discussing this, did you have a lot of citizens that were concerned about this status?
There was a lot when it first came out, and I believe the town of Côte Saint-Luc passed a resolution way back last year. They asked us why we didn't do it. We told them it's only symbolic. They're still going to have to redo the other one once they get the notice. So we're gonna wait until we got the notice. And they were worried that we should have sent the first resolution in, but it was only symbolic. We told them that, but there was a lot of questions about it, and we got to keep that. You know, we've got to keep this bilingualism. And there was nobody saying, well, we're going to get rid of it. You know, why don't you get rid of it? You know, no, it was always for keeping the bilingual status.
And do you know if this is something that is going to have to be done yearly?
Well, that is something to be looked at, I think. Probably not yearly, but probably maybe in 4 years or something. It would have to be renewed, maybe. I don't know. I would have to look at it through the Greffier Owen Falcaro to see exactly. But whatever it takes, that's what we'll be doing. Let's say look at every time there's an election, municipal election, and like in November of 2025, would they be obliged then to do it again with a new council coming in? But with this council that's here, we've certainly opted to keep the bilingual status. So I don't know for sure, but if it takes that, it takes it, we'll do it. So.
Now, from your perspective, do you think that other municipalities that currently have this bilingual status, do you think that it's important that they protect it and that they go out of their way to do so?
Oh, certainly, certainly. I mean, there's a lot of other towns. I think there's 16 or 19 towns in the townships, eastern townships, that got the notice. The ones that were over 50, like I said, Brome Village, I think all the towns will be wanting to keep their bilingual status to be able to serve the English population to the maximum, that's for sure.
Hi, I'm Alex Wright in Prince Edward County, Ontario. You are tuned into Viewpoints. Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca.
Activist is calling for more criminal consequences against countries or corporations that damage the environment. Nelson's resident Jamie Hunter, a representative of the Canadian branch of the International Stop Ecocide Campaign, wants the International Criminal Court to pursue crimes against the environment. Hunter says he and his colleagues received a good reception at the recent COP15 Biodiversity Conference in Montreal. The Stop Ecocide campaign investigates practices like deep-sea bottom trawling in industrial fishing, oil spills, and deep-sea mining as potential acts of ecocide. The organization is aiming for the International Criminal Court to add ecocide as a prosecutable offense. More on this with John Roon in Nelson, British Columbia.
Should crimes against the environment be arrestable offenses with an opening to pursue them in criminal court? Well, that's what the campaign Stop Ecocide is arguing for after representatives returned home after the COP15 biodiversity conference in Montreal in December. Kootenai Morning spoke to Jamie Hunter, a Nelson resident who joined the group and traveled to Montreal to connect with others who want to see harsher penalties for crimes against nature.
Right now, there's a movement of giving rights to nature, but those rights don't mean anything unless we actually have a criminal law to back them up with. So it would be an international crime, and so individual countries would then ratify that crime into their domestic legal systems, and so there would be the opportunity for it to be tried domestically initially, but if for some reason a country was unable or unwilling to do that, it could go to the ICC and be tried at the international level there.
The conference was the first time that the Canadian branch of Stop Ecocide got together in person to chisel out strategies and hear from their international counterparts. Jamie Hunter said the group's idea of adding ecocide along crimes like genocide or war crimes in international court got a warm reception.
People came from all over. It was especially positive to see there were a great number of people from Africa, from the continent. Many of those people were from countries that are really being threatened right now by climate change and by biodiversity loss, and so they were particularly interested in solutions like Stop Ecocide.
Although a complex thing to get past, Jamie Hunter said he is hopeful that ecocide one day will become a prosecutable offense, but some resolutions were made during the conference, such as the so-called 30-30 rule,
which is protecting 30% of land and oceans by 2030. Canada did agree to this target.
Mm-hmm.
Will they meet it? That's the problem, really, is that these agreements are non-binding. Mm. So if a country doesn't meet the targets, there's really no consequence except public opinion. Really, the only way to make sure that these agreements are kept is for the public to be pushing.
Jamie Hunter said the International Stop Ecocide campaign, which started in 2017, felt some wind in the sails after the Montreal conference. Reporting in Nelson, John Roon.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Abakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
A fiber optic project has hit rocky terrain on Cortes Island in British Columbia, and the planned high-speed internet network will be delayed for a few months. Island residents were hoping they could finally get high-speed internet in January. They will have to wait until spring, says CityWest Regional Manager for Cortes Island, Dino Tsakonas. CityWest is part of a $45 million Connected Coast project. The company began work on Cortes Island in January 2022. Tsakonas says that once service becomes available, internet speeds will jump from the current 8 to 10 megabytes per second download speed to up to 100 megabytes per second. Details with Greg Osoba on Cortes Island, British Columbia.
CityWest, a telecommunications company based on BC's coast, has been working on Cortes Island since January 2022 to bring fiber optic service to homes and businesses. It's part of the $45 million Connected Coast project funded by the federal and provincial governments, along with the Strathcona Regional District. CityWest Regional Manager Dino Tsakonas had originally hoped high-speed internet via fiber optic cable would begin on Cortes Island in January 2023, but that's now delayed until sometime this spring. He says the rocky terrain has made construction of the network challenging.
CityWest teams will be back on Cortes Island within the next month to continue work on our on-island network for Manson, Squirrel Cove, and Seaford.
And do you have any sense of, and I know it's going to be a phased-in approach in terms of which parts of the island get the fiber optic first, can you just let us know when the switch will be flipped for the first part of Cortes to receive that fiber optic service?
Yeah, so the communities I just mentioned, Manzanilla, Squirrel Cove, and Seaford, we're aiming to have our first customers online by spring 2023.
All right, and is there a date in mind? Is it?
There's not a specific date. not an exact date. We're looking at anywhere like a March to April to May kind of thing, right? With projects this big, you're going to see that kind of thing. But yeah, so spring 2023, we're going live on the south end in Squirrel Cove, Seaford.
And then when might the Whale Town community get service?
So once the construction team finishes their work in those three communities, they'll be heading to resume construction there.
So would they be like a number of months behind or when the other
service happens? Yeah, be a number of months behind. So we don't have an exact launch date for the services we've done yet. We'll have an update on our launch later this year.
Now, do you have a sense, Dino, how many people or businesses have signed up actually for at least the trial 2 months free service and then hopefully securing them as actual customers for City West?
Cortez residents probably have been fielding a lot of calls of late, but I have an exact number for you, but I do urge people to answer those phones, answer those emails, because if you can sign up before the launch date in your community, you can take advantage of that 2 months free internet.
So you don't have a hard and fast number about how many people have actually signed up to date?
No, I do not right now.
Give us a sense, you know, about the process. I know you were ambitiously hoping that introduction of service might even happen this month, being January of 2023. What have been, I don't know, the hardships or the challenges that have not allowed things to go as quickly as you had hoped?
Cortez, as we know, it's very rocky, right? The biggest challenge has been like getting the main line done and also like just getting all the dices in a row to make sure that we have the right permits for all the landing sites and also for the Ministry of Highways as well. But Cortez, it's a really rocky, it's really not easy to get to every resident on Cortez. So that would be the biggest challenge, I would say.
It's actually getting to people's homes or businesses.
Yeah,
because some of the landing sites you can see are already constructed and look ready to receive the signal.
Yep.
Is that part of it done already?
Yes, that part of it is done. Now it's just connecting all of the landing sites together and also doing those final touches with power and then also just getting all those little tiny fine details in line so when we can launch this spring.
Okay, and Dino, I don't know if you have this number in the top of your head, but I'm just curious, like, how much of a City West crew or contracted staff have been involved in this process to bring fiber optic cable to Cortez Island? But I'm just curious, like, how many staff have been involved in this project so far on Cortez?
I would like to say all of City West staff has been involved in bringing services to Cortez. And I think we have over 100 City West staff at the moment, but every last one of them has been involved. They've either fielded a call or have been to Cortez, and there's crews outside of like the Connecticut Coast. They're not City West employees, but they also are helping bring service to Cortez.
And finally, Dino Chakas, the service that we currently have available on Cortez tends to be in the low to moderate bandwidth or speed of around, 8 to 10 megabits per second for downloads. What will the new fiber optic service provided by City West do in terms of that?
We're offering a package that is actually not advertised. It's a package that we've done this for these remote communities. And our slowest speed is 30 megs down, 30 megs up. 30 megs download, 30 megs up, all unlimited. So you can use that as much data as you want. So there's no data overages. But the plan that we try to recommend is 100 down, 100 up, and that starts at $88 per month.
So essentially, you're talking about speed that is 9 to 10 times faster, or minimum 3 times faster than existing service.
Correct.
Wow. That's quite something. We'll see how that goes.
All right. Well, I'm excited for it. I can't wait to get my service myself on Cortez.
Okay, Dino Chakas, thanks again so much for speaking with CKTZ, and we look forward to hearing more as we move along into the spring.
Great. Thank you so much, Greg.
Greg Osoba, Cortez Island.
You're listening to Viewpoints. I'm Boris Hassan. And finally, the Six Nations community is mourning the loss of former Six Nations elected chief Bill Montour. He passed away on Sunday, January 8, at the age of 81. Montour was born on Six Nations as the oldest of nine siblings. Montour served twice as elected Six Nations chief. Current elected chief Mark Hill says the former chief was a mentor to him. Chief Bill Montour had such a way of bringing people together and truly embodied hard work and resilience, says Hill. David Moses is in Ashwickan, Ontario.
Former Six Nations elected chief Bill Montour passed away on Sunday, January 8th of 2023 at the age of 81. Chief Montour served twice as elected chief, first from 1986 to 1991 and again from 2007 until 2013. In addition, he sat as a councillor in 1976 during the 40th Election Council, and he also served as a board member at CKRZ-FM. Montour was the oldest of nine siblings and was born on Six Nations in 1941. As chief, he initiated negotiations and construction of the Six Nations elementary schools, the Iroquois Village Plaza, and the water treatment plant. Plus, during his first term in office, Bill was instrumental in getting the Six Nations sports and cultural arena constructed. Mr. Montour was also employed by the Assembly of First Nations and the Department of Indian Affairs in Ottawa between his time serving as elected chief. At the recent Six Nations elected council meeting on January 10th, current elected chief Mark Hill asked for a moment of silence and passed condolences on to Bill Montour's family.
I would like to take this opportunity to have a moment of silence in sending our most sincere condolences to former Chief Bill Montour and his family and friends. As we all know, Bill has contributed many things to this community and has really been a trailblazer for many projects and what buildings we see here in our community today. He was a fantastic leader. I think he was one of really bringing our people together.
Chief Hill also referenced how the former chief had been a mentor to him and, in a press release, how this was a tremendous loss for the community.
I know Bill he'd mentored me all through my years as well, and really want to pay my respects and honor Bill and his legacy. I know that'll live on through many of his members of his family and so forth. And so with that being said, I want to send again our most heartfelt, sincere condolences on behalf of the elected council to former Chief Bill Montour.
Mr. Montour also served as the president of the Six Nations Minor Hockey Association for many years. I'm David Moses.
So that's it for us this week. Thanks to our journalists, Alexander Wright, David Moses, Ryan Hunt, Taylor McClure, John Roon, and Craig Osoba. Welcome to our new recruit, Alexandra Fernandez, working out of Kingston, Ontario. National Coordinator Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Want to hear more? Well, there's lots more on canada-info.ca, canada-info.ca. Hundreds of stories are waiting for your eyes and ears. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Stay tuned. Happy to have you with us. Goodbye.
Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.